dynamic voices for a diverse church. This is Pass the Mic.
Greetings and God bless. Welcome to another episode of Pass the Mic, dynamic voices for a diverse church, powered by The Witness, a Black Christian collective. I'm your host, Tyler Burns. You can follow me on Twitter at Burns Clan and Instagram as well at Burns Clan. Please don't forget about the gram. Please follow at your own risk. And joining me, as always, is the founder of The Witness, extensive bio, I tell you, the man, the myth, the legend, the two-time best-selling author, Mr. Blue Check Verified himself, Dr. Jamar Tisby. What's going on, brother?
I'd like to welcome you all to the latest episode of Pass the Mic.
Yeah, okay.
We have our NPR audio filter on.
Nah, we're not doing no NPR audio filter. The Bo just quit. Bo just quit. We're looking for a new executive producer. So please put
I had to do something to lighten it up. We talking heavy today.
Yes, we are talking very heavy today. We have been talking about a lot of difficult, heavy things over the past few years, and especially this year, and still that will continue. And one of the things that I was led to talk about, and we've been having a discussion about privately, is a tweet. It actually was inspired by a tweet by our good friend Akemini Uwan, the host of Truth's Table, the award-winning, we have to recognize him, the award-winning podcast. We love, love, love our sisters, Dr. Christina Edmondson, Akemini Uwan, Pastor Michelle Higgins. We love y'all so much.
Shout out to them.
And immediately after the untimely tragic death of Michael K. Williams, the actor, Michael K. Williams is probably best known for his role as Omar Little in The Wire. And he's also known as his role Chalky White in Boardwalk Empire. Just most recently, he played in Lovecraft Country, all kinds of different movies and television shows. And she tweeted something that really grabbed me, and it was not in a question. It was in an affirmative statement, a declarative statement that Black men should grow old. Black men should grow old. And I mentioned this because much of my thought process and my perception is really in the vein of this episode, which is a question, which is, can Black men grow old?
Oof.
And when I say that, I'm not just simply saying, can we in terms of our will, but can we in terms of, is it possible? Is it actually a theoretical possibility for us to grow old? And I think we should talk about what that means, number one. But I thought it would be such a pertinent, poignant topic for us, because that is something that we are navigating as Black men. And that is something that, I don't know about you, Jay, but something I think about all the time. When you
and
see
as fathers of sons,
yes, as fathers of sons, and then as a father of a daughter, for me, you know, I think about walking her down the aisle. Like, I think about all those types of things as a father, as you see her transitioning in very quick and progressive and incredible ways, and just growing up quickly.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think about this, Jamar? Does this resonate with you?
Yeah. So I saw that tweet as well, and immediately it was burned into my memory as something I'll never forget as a question, because it was
Akemini is good for that.
She's really good for that. Oh my goodness. Because it put in a concise form this sort of ambiguous anxiety that sort of hangs around Black men all the time. I mean, look, getting in the car feels sometimes like an existential crisis.
Talk about this. When did this start, though? That's this ambiguous anxiety.
Yeah.
When did this start for you? Because I feel like that's really instructive as to what made us question whether or not our existence and our flourishing was accepted by the society and then possible in our lived reality.
You know what? I think it's early for all of us. It's one of those things that feels like it's in the air, it's in the atmosphere. But I can remember watching the Rodney King coverage, and my parents, especially my mom, just making comments like, you know, that's what they do to us. That's what they do to our people. And I mean, I'm a kid at this point. I didn't know all that she meant. I knew it had to something to do with black people. But I also remember seeing that coverage. Remember, tech-wise, this was one of the first instances where we got it caught live on video. So, we are watching this, and it is mind-blowing to a lot of people, even black people who we knew it happened, but to see it broadcast on TV and to know that other people now see it happen, like that was a big thing. So there was always that sense. And then as a teenager, you know, I remember going to the arcade and almost without fail, me and my black and brown friends, we had one white guy in our group. The rest of them were Latino and black. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Got followed. Just followed in an arcade. Like, what are you going to do? Yeah. What are you going to smash and grab at an arcade? It's not like a clothing store or whatever, selling video games. But the automatic air of suspicion was always there.
Yes.
But it certainly ramped up when I started driving. Because I just think that is, you know, there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop when you're black.
Right, right.
Particularly a black male.
Right. You know, I think something that I was actually talking with Dante Stewart, and I were talking about this, is this idea that one of the things that made me consider that, oh, we might not make it to a certain age or make it to an age of enjoyment, is the fact that I felt like I couldn't celebrate anything. Mm. And the fact that I felt like I couldn't celebrate fully, and I couldn't celebrate freely. And this is something I'm still learning how to do. And I'm learning how to just be in the moment. Like, I'm learning how to just be in the moment and enjoy and the freedom of body and the freedom of voice and laughter. And I remember a couple of instances right after I got out of college where I had birthdays and I had parties, but they weren't really like fun. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Say, like, what?
Yeah, like you.
What did you feel like you couldn't celebrate?
Anything, life. But I also felt like I couldn't celebrate accomplishments. You know what I'm saying? So you feel like you just can't celebrate those moments where you're like, man, I should be happy. I should be proud of this moment. And we talked about how it's such a thing ingrained in our minds and in our heads that we can't celebrate milestones. You know, he's getting ready to release his first book. And by the time this is coming out, probably already released. I mean, man, like, milestone, right?
Huge.
Huge.
We're about to schedule him on the show, too.
Exactly. He's going to be on the show. It's like, we're so excited, right? But it's like, as he's like, man, I don't know if I can actually enter into this. I'm struggling to enter into this. He's like, I don't know why. And you know, there are transitions I've made. I'm excited, happy. But I'm like, but can I really celebrate? What are people going to think if I do this or this? And part of that is your natural maturity. You stop caring about that. But then another part of it is, man, black joy is such a dangerous act.
I was going to say, like, what made you feel like you couldn't celebrate?
I think it was part of like upbringing stuff and all kinds of, but I feel like black joy in and of itself is always held back just a little bit in certain contexts, right? Because, and I think that's part of the reasons why black men don't think they can grow old, or we can't grow old, is because we can't enjoy. Like, we can't enjoy life. Life is not an enjoyable act.
Okay. Does this connect at all? And this is going to sound terrible. Black men smiling or not smiling in pictures.
Bruh, yes. Okay, so we need to talk about this, right? So we need to talk about this. And I just talked about this on IG. I spent years not smiling in pics.
I remember.
Years not smiling. And I was like, why don't I smile in pics? I couldn't even explain it. And I was just, and it wasn't that I had like a casual expression. I was looking mad.
Looking hard, yeah. Looking hard. Because we feel like we have to be hard in order to endure the world.
But it's self-protection.
But see, yes. And I remember on Twitter years and years and years ago, our friend BJ, there was like a group picture with him and some friends, and none of them were smiling. And somebody commented, why aren't you guys smiling? And he replied, 400 years of oppression. You?
Very BJ-like. BJ making everything deep. That's very BJ-like. No, but that's interesting, right? So, yes, I think it does connect to that. I think it does connect to that. And I think it also connects to the burden that we feel to overprotect everything in our lives and to overprotect ourselves.
Yes.
And then to feel as though there is no safe place for us after we have tried to create it for everyone else.
So tell me what you think of this. Is that self-protection gendered in any way? Is it different for Black men and Black women?
Ooh, yep, of course, I'm sure. You know, like, absolutely. I can't speak from a Black woman's perspective, but of course. But what I have found is, there is such a nurture gap for us as Black men. And we are so deficient emotionally in many ways, like trying to navigate like a command of our emotions and our proper engagement with our emotions, that I feel like it hits different in our experience because we can go years without doing that. And that thing just be normal. You know what I'm saying? We go years without nurturing. And just be like, well, you know, that's how. And we just say, well, it's what it is. I'm trying to be a man. It is what it is. Yeah. You know, we're going to make it through. Just all these toxic positivity, spiritual bypassing phrases. Oh, you know, hey, it's going to work out.
Which holding that in actually has physical and emotional effects, which affect our longevity in life, right? It would be helpful. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but the life expectancy of Black men as a compared to women and as compared to people of other races is almost invariably lower. Mm-hmm. And like, even just that knowledge, this is the ambiguous part of the anxiety. Even just that knowledge that by the numbers, I'm expected to be on this earth less time than almost any group. It sort of hounds you.
Yeah, and Black men are, I think, the latest at life expectancy numbers are 9 years. 9 years earlier. Years shorter than Black women.
Good night.
Right.
Which obviously places a huge burden on Black women.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I think this is important because as young Black men, young, gifted, and Black, walking in this freedom, trying to embody it, we have to acknowledge what deeply burdens us. And we have to allow ourselves to be unburdened and to lay aside the heavy weight so that we can see life as not something to be endured but enjoyed. And so that we can truly have healthy, present relationships with those we love and those who love us.
Life is what?
Oh, not to be endured, but enjoyed.
Yes, that's a word.
You know, and that we can truly have healthy, present relationships for those we love and those who love us.
Yeah.
And I think part of this is we're so task-driven, task-oriented, you know, that we'll just keep pushing. And even this was his choice, so I don't say this negatively or disparagingly, but I mean, you think of Chadwick, and I honor him and what he did, and he did what he wanted to do, the way he wanted to do it.
Went out the way he wanted to.
But it's like, man, he kept working, bro.
Yeah.
Bro.
Like he had to leave it all on the field.
Bro, he kept working.
To the very last.
To the end.
Same with John Perkins, 91.
Exactly, yeah.
91. Bro, you've earned your rest, you know, in this life, not just when you die.
Why can't we enjoy life, man?
Why can't we rest? So okay. I want to go back a little bit.
Well, let's pause. Let's get into an ad break because I think it's important. We need to let this breathe for a minute. And then we're going to let this breathe. Then we're going to come back and talk about why Jamar says we can't rest. Right here. What? Right here on Pass the Mic. We'll be back. Hey, Jamar, you know, we have been doing Pass the Mic for about 7 years now. That is, I don't know how many episodes.
A lot.
Millions of downloads. I mean, so many sessions. And we still love doing this, right?
We absolutely do. I am amazed at how much energy we have. I think it gets better, like fine wine, over time as we do it.
That's what we tell ourselves.
Yes. At least. Touch, man, and agree.
I want us to do this for another 7 years. And to do this, we are needing the audience's help.
Yes.
We need your help as listeners to fund this incredible work here that we're doing at Pass the Mic. And they can do that through our Patreon community.
Yes. Would you consider becoming a patron of Pass the Mic for just a dollar an episode?
$1.
You can support this work. Go to patreon.com/passthemic, M-I-C, patreon.com/passthemic, and fund and fuel this work for the next 7 years.
The next 7 years, the next 10 years, who knows, the next 50 years, if the Lord should tarry. We are excited about
continuing
the work.
We're going to be holograms.
Yes, we will. But you can fund it at patreon.com/passthemic. Thank you all so much for your help and support.
Thank you. So I want to go back a little bit and probe this feeling of threat, this ambiguous anxiety, because I think it is, there is a distinct and particular form of threat that we face as Black men, which is not to say that Black women don't face all kinds of threats.
Absolutely.
And compounding 100%. Threats, right? Like it's not either or, this is not the oppression Olympics, right? We're just saying that in particular, the way white supremacy functions, it's not only racial, it's also patriarchal. It's also gendered, right? So Black men have always been valued and exploited for their labor. Black women valued and exploited for their labor and their reproductive labor, right?
Yes, yes.
But our bodies, our physical bodies have been weaponized against us in a way such that as men, white men see us as a physical threat.
Yes.
And so they've always responded to that fear with physical violence.
Yeah, to be controlled. Yeah, to be controlled.
The control of Black bodies, right? And so I think about the ways that my very enfleshedness is what makes life dangerous for me.
Woo.
That's what's heavy.
Yes.
That's what is compounding and cumulative.
Yes.
In terms of the stress and the impact on your body is here. I used to say, as soon as a Black man walks out of the door of his home, he's in danger. I don't say that anymore because of Botham Shem Jean. He was in his living room, eating ice cream, killed in his own apartment.
My goodness.
So there's really no place, right? I heard a story. I was doing a speaking engagement of a Black man, has his PhD, in charge of a large organization, lives in a nice neighborhood. I can't remember why they called the cops on him, but he's in his house. Oh, the lights were on. For some reason, he had an infant, and the lights were on while he was taking care of his infant in the middle of the night, and somebody called the cops. They come, guns already drawn, knock on the door, barge in, and he's a big guy, and the bigger you are, the more threat is perceived, right? And they come in this man's home with his wife and infant child. Guns drawn, and had he made a false move, the wrong statement, or the wrong police officer,
goodness,
dead. And all they knew about him was that he's a Black guy.
Goodness.
And then you take that on every time we hear about that. That's us. That's our brother, right? That's our son. And I'm just saying the mental wear and tear that then, you know, the body keeps the score.
Yeah. I also think that there is not a place to release the burden that is within our infleshness. And what should be a place to release the burden, you take your spiritual community, right? What should be a place to release the burden is actually a place that reinforces the myth. So the thing we're literally trying to stay away from gets reinforced. And what I mean by that is the thing that causes us to be viewed as threats, we double down on often for men, right? So we end up doubling down on the things. You know, I've been watching this one particular movement by a pastor I know, and it's a movement where it's encouraging men to pray and cry. Right? And so it's encouraging them to cry. And not just cry, just to cry, but pray and cry, you know, and how powerful that is just to see men, you know, crumpled on the floor, broken, you know, and entering into a moment of spiritual intimacy, you know, and together. And how much different does that look for most of our men's discipleship and men's movement, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with physicality. Like, I think that's a good thing. It's a healthy thing. But most of our men's discipleship is rooted in physicality, right? It was kind of this whole thing in the 90s, you know, early 2000s, fight clubs, right?
And a very narrow conception of masculinity.
Exactly. So fight clubs. We can go fight. Yes. And it's like, no, I think it's good for us to fight, and it's good for us to, that's fun. That's, if we go and shoot guns on the range, that's fun, right? But that doesn't necessarily, when that's the sum of our discipleship expression, the expression of our infleshness, what does that actually lead to? What that leads to is the reinforcing and doubling down of a myth that exists. And it also reinforces brokenness in us. Because we don't use those spaces, which are intimate spaces for us, to heal and then take it back to places and people that we love. But we use it as places to arm up. So we add more weight. We gear up, right? There's iron, you know, fight, all these ideas. It gears us back up to get into a defensive, in-flesh burden mindset. When what we need most is the freedom to take the armor off. And what we need most is someone to be able to see our wounds and our scars and to nurse them.
I think you brought up such a great point, which is the flip side of the same coin, which is joy, right? There's a whole hashtag, Black Boy Joy, or Black Boy Fly, right? And it's so interesting. So you brought up, like, for instance, the gun range, right? We could name whatever activity. And I think one of the errors we make is ascribing value to the activity, when what we really are valuing is the joy that we get out of that activity. So the reality is, it could be that. That's it could good. Be fishing. It could That's be good. Knitting. It could be whatever. That's what good. We're talking about is joy.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And what we've done is mistaken this particular activity, which we say is manly and masculine, as the only thing that can bring that kind of joy. So we pursue the activity when really we should be pursuing the virtue of joy.
Yes, and the community there within.
Absolutely. It's the camaraderie, right?
We need to also talk about why we don't stop. Okay, so I'm putting myself on the couch here, okay? Jamar knows me very well. Jamar knows my pace very well.
My.
You know, sometimes you just feel like you can't stop. You feel like you can't reflect. You can't sit. You can't be. You can't cease. And that's a spiritual issue, right?
Yeah.
And that's an issue of spiritual maturity and discipleship, right? In many ways. But then it's also this pressing feeling like, I got to get ahead of this curve, whatever this is, in whatever area I'm talking about. I got to get ahead of this. And I got to make sure I'm ahead of this. Because if I'm not ahead of this, it's going to be me or somebody else that gets in trouble. And more than likely, people I love.
Absolutely.
And so you start thinking about it in that context of like, man, you know what? I'm trying to get ahead. I'm trying to stay ahead of whatever is chasing me. Because in this world, it's always something. It could be the cops, could be COVID, it could be poverty.
Yeah.
Some gonna chase me down.
Yeah.
And some gonna make me a threat.
And I think so there's the can't stopness of I got people depending on me. I need to put food on the table or whatever it might be.
Yes.
But there's also the can't stopness of everywhere I turn, there are messages about my supposed inferiority.
Hmm.
And I can't stop because then what they're saying about me will be true. I can't stop because I have to achieve at a level, be active at a level to refute all of their negative stereotypes and prejudices about me. Because if I stop, and if I just be like they can, by the way, then I become the stereotype. I become the whatever, right? So I think there's part of that is in a society that seeks to constantly deface the image of God in you, we, without naming it as such, without perhaps consciously knowing it, are constantly trying to reclaim that dignity.
Yes.
Which can only actually be found in Christ.
Right.
But we seek it through activity, achievement, surpassing expectations, whatnot.
Right. Right. Yes. Yes.
And I need folks to understand this goes beyond an individual kind of striving.
Oh, 100%. Right? And that is very true. So yes, it is. The individual striving is a thing, but it goes deeper than that. And there's deeper considerations for that reality. How do we preserve ourselves? How do Black men preserve themselves? Because I love us. I know we say I love us and we mean like, everybody, the diaspora. And I love us in that context. I love Black men. I love who we are, how we are, some of our unwritten customs and rules. I love everything, the way we carry ourselves. The inspiration I get when seeing other Black men succeed and win.
Can I tell you a quick story about what reminded me of how much I love Black men?
Absolutely. Please.
Most people don't know this because it was actually a very painful season in my life, but I was the interim principal at one of the first two public charter schools in Mississippi. And long story, but I did not plan that. Right. But I would shake hands with the students every morning when they came in. And this was back in 2015. It was, in my experience, right when we're as Black men really leaning into natural hair, and you started to see sponges out and all of this stuff was growing it out longer. Because when I was in school, it was all about the fade.
It was all about the waves and lines.
Yes, the lines, right? So now the longer hair is starting to come back. And I actually saw it most frequently on my fifth and sixth grade boys. And I would shake hands with them in the morning as they were coming in. I was just watching these guys walk in the fullness of their Blackness, embracing their Black bodies and their Black hair. And even as fifth and sixth graders, I'm like, these men are lions.
Yep.
And this was in a phase where I was just coming out of like reformed circles and very conservative, overwhelmingly white spaces. And I just remember thinking, why do I have my hair like I do? It was almost shaved bald. It was just super short, all one length, everything like that. And I had to tell myself, you know, I had done it for a long time. This was all the way back to high school when I was doing this. It was utilitarian because I was working at a forest preserve and it was hot and sweaty. It was just easier to be bald. It's also in the Jordan era. Of course. But so it did serve a function then. But I had to admit, as an adult in that circumstance, a lot of what I was doing in keeping my hair very short was to appease expectations of white people about what looked professional. And I remember seeing those boys
And they inspired me like, what? Why am I? This is beautiful. This is strong, in a beautiful way.
Yes.
And it's affirming. So that's when I started to grow my hair out.
That's amazing.
And I've never looked back.
That's really dope.
And that's the love, you know what I'm saying? So back to your point.
No, but we got to, bro, I think one of the things that actually does sustain us, and you touched on it there, is we got to be around each other.
Say that.
We got to be around each other, you know? We got to be around each other. We got to take more trips together.
Okay, so you talked about how do we preserve. I think a big part of it, I always default to joy, right? There's going to be others who say we need therapy, which is true.
Yes, absolutely.
We need community, which is true. I'm just like, we need to have fun.
You know what would be so subversive and countercultural is a Witness Black Men's Retreat. wouldn't that be amazing? Where we can literally do this stuff. I'm talking about like a retreat, like 4 or 5 days. Like it's got to stop your life. You got to stop your life.
As long as it's fun. A good part of it.
Absolutely. the mixture, the fullness. We can do that stuff. I don't mind shooting guns. I don't mind fishing. Like, let's do that stuff. But
and
we can
do other stuff.
We can do other stuff.
Yeah.
We can do sports.
We can do the massage. And
the massage?
The mimosa.
Okay. That's deep.
This is what I'm saying. Like number one, we need to expand the aperture of possibility in terms of what counts
as
a men's activity,
of
right?
Of course. No, that's not what I'm saying. Yes.
And then what really constitutes like just letting loose. Here's the thing. I always walk around so guarded because I feel at any time there's going to be a fight.
Right.
And I don't even necessarily mean a physical altercation, but some instance where I'm going to have to defend myself or attack in order to for self-preservation, right? That's the constant feeling. I'll give you a concrete example. Just the other day, we're in rural Arkansas recording, beautiful lake, go out to eat. I'm like, Bo, you go in first.
You go in first.
He's the white guy.
Yeah.
Go in, scope it out. Tell them we're here. We'll wait here for our table. And that's me. That's Jamar. But that's also somebody who's doing racial justice work in the Deep South, in the Delta, knowing you can't just walk in any place and not knowing what places are safe and what places are more dangerous. So to me, a men's retreat, what's a retreat about it is you're in a place where you don't feel like there's going to be a fight at any moment. And that's when we get to relax. That's when we get to be emotional. That's when we get to have joy.
We need that. We need to do that. Would you come? Would y'all come? Would y'all come through? Would y'all pull up? We need to do that. We don't have to do it in Pensacola, although, you know.
I am in favor of a beach or someplace hot.
We should do that, man. That's just, I feel like that proximity, that retreat, that trip, that love, that joy would be so preserving and necessary, not just for us, but for the people who love us, you know, the diverse groups who care about us, you know, and who want to see us survive. And then also that interact with us. So we could be
healed
men.
They haven't seen us like off mic.
So we could be healed men. No, I love that, man. I love that. I think we're in pursuit of growing old, and we're in pursuit of sitting back and enjoying what God, even as we work.
Yeah.
Even as sometimes there is a struggle.
You know what? On that tip, I feel almost guilty for not struggling every second. This part goes back to why we feel like we can't rest. It's because there's a part of me that feels like unless I'm publicly perceived as engaging in some sort of struggle against oppression constantly, then I'm being like self-indulgent, or I'm not down with the cause,
right,
or I've sold out, whatever. But in a way, isn't that what we're working toward, is to not always have to struggle?
Absolutely.
And why should we feel guilty for the gains that other people who came before us, whether our parents or other activists, the struggle that they've endured so that we wouldn't have to struggle the way they did?
And the more we struggle, the more unhealthy we are, the more we don't grow old, you know? So.
Which, black male survival is resistance.
Yes, yes.
To be there for the next generation, to be there for the conferences and the confabs when we're old heads and they can ask us questions.
Yes.
To be there to lead churches.
Yes.
As seasoned men and not just talented young folks, right?
Yes.
To be there, obviously, for children and grandchildren, should that be in your path, right? There's a subversiveness to that.
It's beautiful.
There's a collective wisdom. There's a knowledge that comes with growing old as a crown of glory, right? Gray hair, your gray hair can be a crown of glory. And how a black man surviving and even thriving and then living long enough to pass that on, to pass that wisdom on, even material resources on, to interrupt the cycle. Maybe that's why we can't grow old. You can't have these men who gamed the system and figured it out and how to come out the other side. It's the Hunger Games. You can't have the survivors going and telling everybody all the secrets.
Yes. Yes.
Well, no, man.
I love that. I love that. Live, black man, live.
Live free.
Live free. And come to our retreat. Come to our retreat. We're going to do this.
Tyler's naming it.
Did I? Live, black man? Is that the retreat? Black man live? Huh. Okay. We're going to get back to you.
This episode was brought to you in part by United We Pray. United We Pray is a podcast devoted to praying and thinking about racial strife, especially between Christians. Come join us in praying for the unity of God's people.